Chapter 22. Sunday, 8:04 a.m. Lucy froze. Ivan was too far away for her to jump him, and way, way too calm for her liking. He'd fantasized about this a lot, a whole hell of a lot. He wasn't like the other two, she realized now. Ivan targeted little girls not because he was a dedicated pedophile, but because they were easy to control and terrorize. Damn, how could she have been so wrong? Her breath collided with the knot of fear tightening in her throat. She gulped them both down hard. "I don't have the keys," she said, keeping her voice low and her gaze on his hands, avoiding any challenging eye contact.
"Don't mess with me, bitch."
She saw his backhanded slap coming and rolled with it, dropping to her knees. He lunged forward, grabbing her hair, twisting it in his free fist before she could reach her weapon, which would have been a suicide move anyway, just as calling in her team would be, until she calmed him down and got the gun farther away from her. Instead, she reached for her hair, trying to ease the pressure ripping across her scalp. Ivan planted the Taurus's barrel in the center of her forehead, pressing so hard it gouged her flesh. Adrenaline roared through her brain, so loud she had to strain to hear his words.
"Earl, search her bag. Get the keys," he ordered.
"Johnny, find something to tie her up with."
"Where'd you get the gun?"
the schoolteacher asked, standing frozen on the edge of Lucy's peripheral vision. He'd gone pale, couldn't seem to stop licking his lips.
"Never mind that. Just do what I say. Tie her up."
Ivan's words came fast, as if he had rehearsed them. Lucy bet he had. Late at night, alone in the dark, one hand wrapped around his penis, the other stroking his gun as he fantasized this moment. He sounded excited, thrilled with anticipation, triumphant. Show the fish what they want, but don't let them have it. A quick flash of her family filled her vision. She blinked it away. She had to focus, stay in control, if she was going to get out of here alive. The dentist dumped her bag out on the bed.
"No car keys here."
"Where is it, bitch?"
Ivan yanked her head back so hard fire raced across her scalp, bringing genuine tears to her eyes.
"I told you, I left the van running. It's too hot to leave a kid out there,"
she blurted in a gush, letting the tears flow.
"Please don't hurt Katie. She's just a little girl. Please don't."
"Earl, go see if what she says is true. If it is, bring the girl and the keys back."
Earl left. One down, two to go.
"What do you want?"
Lucy asked, stalling for time. Johnny didn't seem much of a threat. It was Ivan she needed to worry about. As long as she wasn't restrained, she can get out of this. Alive.
"I'll tell you."
Ivan's gun remained centered on her forehead, but his gaze grew unfocused as he relived his fantasy. She'd bet this was the closest he'd ever come to fulfilling it. For all his mental rehearsing, he was still a virgin.
"First of all, I'm going to give you what you wanted. You get to watch.
Earl and Johnny will take their photos, finish with the girl. Then we're going to take a drive out to the woods. And then..." His mouth parted in anticipation, sweat gleaming from his upper lip.
"It's my turn."
"Uh-huh. Couldn't any of these whack jobs get creative? Always the same old sadistic fantasies. It was almost comical, except for the 9mm aimed at her brain." "I can't find any rope," Johnny said, his voice petulant now that he'd gotten used to the idea that their innocent little hijinks had suddenly morphed into premeditated murder.
"Rip the cord from the lamp."
"I tried. I can't." "Then use the phone cord. Damn it, do I have to think of everything?"
He rocked back, his gaze shifting from Lucy to Johnny.
just the opening she was waiting for. "Playdate!" she shouted. She grabbed Ivan's gun hand, twisting it away from her. His grip on her hair tightened, ripping a hunk out. Momentum was on her side as she used the movement to propel her. She launched up in a ferocious headbutt, catching him under his chin. The impact rocketed through her skull. She followed through, propelling him down to the ground, twisting his gun hand so hard bones popped as they separated, landing with her knee on his windpipe. Blood covered his mouth and jaw. His scream ricocheted through the air. The door slammed against the wall. The room filled with shouts of, "FBI, drop the gun! Drop the gun! Hands! Hands! Hands!" The gun was long since dropped. Ivan's scream sputtered into a gurgle. Johnny cried, blubbering as her team slammed him to his knees and cuffed him. "We've got him, Lucy." Fletcher pulled her up and off Ivan. Lucy had to force her hands open, releasing Ivan's mangled wrist. Her head hurt, her scalp burned, her hand throbbed, and nausea knocked her jaws together. Black spots danced before her eyes, reminding her to breathe. She stumbled back as two agents hoisted Ivan to his feet and dragged him out the door that now had a serious dent in its center and hung crookedly on one hinge. "Okay, people, this is a crime scene. Let's get to work," she said, tugging her jacket off. It was too tight, too hot, too heavy. Cameras flashed, notebooks came out. She backed out the door, letting the evidence collection proceed. "You okay?" Fletcher asked. "The medic said Ivan's wrist is broken, and he about bit his tongue in half. Good thing we got him on tape while he could still talk." He trailed after her as Lucy walked to his SUV. Her hands trembled so much it was a strain to open the rear door. She slumped onto the running board, just in time before her legs gave out. Twice in 2 days. What the hell had gone wrong? There'd been no hint that either Pastor Walter or the Canadians were violent, yet she'd almost gotten her team killed twice in 2 days. Greeley was going to flay her alive for this. "You got everything, then?" The words were thick, her mouth dry. "Crystal clear." He leaned against the bumper, arms crossed, chest puffed as if he'd been in there with her instead of just listening and watching through the camera implanted in her choker. "Good." With trembling hands, she retrieved her wedding ring, brushed it against her lips, and slid it back where it belonged. She reached for her bag, grabbed a water bottle, and drank half of it, almost choking in her urgent need. "Your cell phone has been going nuts." "Again?" His voice dripped with disapproval. "God, Megan. Or her mother." Her throat tightened again, and she spewed a mouthful of water onto the pavement. "Give me it." He rummaged in the back of the SUV and handed her the phone. She punched the buttons for voicemail. "Now, don't worry," Nick's message started, and she had a terrible, gut-whirling feeling of déjà vu. "Everything's fine. Megan fainted while we were at Mass, and the ambulance brought us here to Three Rivers. The ER doctor's with her now. Everything's all right." Ambulance. Fainted. Megan had never, ever fainted before. Everything was most certainly not all right. Her jaw muscles clamped down hard, grinding her molars together. Lucy hit the speed dial for Nick's phone, but there was no answer. She started to leave a message, but instead hung up. She had no messages. She had no answers. Only questions. Fletcher was still there, making no excuses for eavesdropping. Lucy really didn't care. "I need to get back to the office anyway. I'll drop you at Three Rivers." Lucy snatched the keys from him. "I'm driving." Lucy had long ago grown used to the feeling that someone was jabbing ice picks in her ears. Any time there was a tough case, the constant pain lancing through her head and neck was the price she paid. Nick had tried hypnosis, her dentist had tried a bite guard, which she had promptly lost, and she had tried popping Advils like they were M&Ms, all without relief. Now her anonymous tormentor had taken a sledgehammer to those ice picks
and was pounding the hell out of him, creating a roar of tippany echoing through her brain. On top of it all, Fletcher was talking, hoping to distract herself from the shifting images of Megan slumped on the floor, strapped to an ambulance, crying for her mother as strangers poked and prodded her. Lucy stretched her mouth into a yawn, popping her jaw joints and allowing Fletcher's voice to cut through the white noise of pain.
"My mom was in the hospital for a while," he was saying. "Don't worry, she's doing fine now. But the doctors and nurses, they're really good. I'm sure they'll take really good care of your daughter.
What's her name?"
"Megan."
Megan, with her smile like sunshine and her sudden flashes of scarily sophisticated humor and her freckles that looked just like her father's.
"She's been sick. I never should have left her."
Lucy's grip on the steering wheel tightened and she clamped her jaws shut.
"You had work to do,"
he said self-righteously, as if repeating a mantra. "Important work. I mean, what if those perverts had gotten their hands on a real kid? 4 years old. I just can't understand anyone interested in sex with a baby like that."
"Our job isn't to understand them."
She changed lanes, cutting off a little old lady hunched over the wheel of a Buick, and cursed the fact that the surveillance vehicle had no lights or siren.
"But you do.
Understand them, I mean." She shot a glare at Fletcher. He ignored it, pivoting his body to face her from the passenger seat, fumbling with a small netbook computer plugged into the cigarette lighter. He carried the damn thing with him everywhere, but she just now noticed that it was a personal computer, not one of the ICE ones. Way he clutched it, Lucy wondered if he spent his downtime surfing for porn. Hoped it was legit. She was in no mood to arrest someone on her own team. She almost laughed at the thought. Nick would have told her she was trying to deflect her anxiety or accuse her of carrying her cop paranoia too far. Both would be true.
"You know how they think, what they want, what they're going to do next," Fletcher continued.
"How do you do that?" Then why had she been caught by surprise twice in 2 days? Damn it, how had she fucked up so badly?
"Believe me, that's not the same as understanding them."
Lucy spotted an opening in traffic and swerved into it. "I don't give a shit why they do what they do. All I want to know is what patterns they'll follow so I can stop them before they hurt someone." His head was genuflecting as if she had quoted scripture.
"But they follow patterns for a reason, don't they?
I mean, I can understand why a full-grown man would feel attracted to a younger woman. Happens all the time. But why a little girl or boy?" In her mind, she was ticking off things she'd have to delegate if Megan were seriously ill. Hated herself even for thinking that way, for assuming the worst. Wasn't that like asking for it to happen? But she was the boss. She couldn't just drop everything. Lives depended on her team working at peak efficiency. Lives like Ashley Yeager's. Walden or Taylor could call her if anything broke. Right now, all they could do was keep working the street and the cyber angle, which left her with a 15-minute drive and too many worst-case scenarios to dwell on. So instead, she answered Fletcher's question. "It doesn't matter if you call it an illness or a perversion or a compulsion," she told the eager specialist. "You have to think in terms of victims."
"But those guys, back in the hotel, they weren't like serial killers or crazy people you see in the movies. I mean, the ones without the gun.
They didn't think of the little girl as a victim. They weren't trying to hurt her.
They didn't think of her at all.
Other than as an object to gratify their needs. If they did hurt her, they wouldn't feel guilt or shame. But they would feel remorse."
"Remorse? Why?"
"They'd be upset because their object wouldn't be available to them anymore. They'd be forced to rely on the second best thing, their memories and fantasies. That's the real trick to catching the worst of these guys. They're all driven to experience the real thing." He hummed a fragment of an old Coke jingle. "Ain't nothing like the real thing, baby." So to catch them, you give them what they want.
Exactly.
She steered the van onto the Squirrel Hill exit and cursed at the backup at the red light. While they waited, she flipped her phone open, called Nick. Still no answer. Then she tried Walden. Hey, anything shaken loose on Ashley Yeager?
No and no. Lots of calls to the hotline overnight. The stadies and sheriffs haven't found any worth our following up. We found the first bus driver, but he didn't remember her at all. No surprise. Haven't found any other drivers or evidence that she took another bus.
She had a plan. No way East Liberty was her final destination before she just happened to end up at the Tasty Treat.
I know.
He sounded as exasperated as she was.
She could have walked to another bus stop, caught a ride with someone, who knows?
It's not important. We know she ended up at the Tasty Treat.
Any luck with Noreen's car? No joy.
What about Tardif? She didn't like the idea of the photographer floating in the breeze, an unknown quantity.
Well, now, there's an interesting story there. He called the missus this morning. And? And he's actually here in Pittsburgh. They didn't talk much. Melissa shushed him and got him off the line quick, but Taylor tracked him. He's been staying in a Shadyside executive rental for the past week.
You bring him in?
Wasn't there. I have Burroughs's guys working on it.
Don't let him drop through the cracks. She inched forward in traffic, coming alongside a girl who looked like Megan riding in the back seat of an Explorer. The tippany returned, threatening to jar her brain loose. Damn it! She needed a break. Ashley needed a break. And so did Megan. Please, Lord. I'm not sure how long I might be held up. Megan fainted at church, and she's at the hospital. There was a pause, as if Walden started to say something, then changed his mind.
She gonna be all right?
I don't know yet. But call me if you guys hear anything. Just because I'm out of the office doesn't mean I'm out of the game.
Relax, boss. We've got everything covered. Burroughs is coming in, and the H-Tech guys have been working all night long. Taylor thinks they might be close to something.
Traffic surged forward. Call me. I mean it, Walden. Call me if anything breaks. She hung up and concentrated on driving. Sunday morning, deli connoisseurs snarled traffic on Murray Avenue before she made it to Wilkins and could cut over to Negley.
Want me to go help them with Ashley's computer? Fletcher asked.
These transcriptions can wait until tomorrow.
No,
she said sharply, remembering his goof yesterday. Thanks, but I don't want to risk any hotshot lawyer giving me grief about chain of custody or evidence tampering. You drop me off and head back to the office. Get everything documented and secured.
Sure, you're the boss,
he said, but his tone reminded her of Megan's favorite pouty wine. When she stole a glance at him, he was settled back in his seat, staring out the passenger window, his face a blank. Whatever. She stopped herself from rolling her eyes and channeling Megan. Having a preteen in the house must be contagious. But she didn't have time to worry about bruised egos. She had a hell of a lot bigger things to worry about. The brightly colored sign for Three Rivers Medical Center appeared, and she turned into the main driveway. She threw the SUV into park and grabbed her purse. Her grip tight and sweaty. She didn't even bother to say goodbye to Fletcher as she sprinted into the building, its cheerful colors greeting her as if she'd entered another world. No amount of paint or chirpy Disney music could disguise the hospital from what it really was. As soon as she took her first breath inside the lobby, she could smell the truth. This was a place of death. Ashley's legs jerked as if to stop her from falling. Her stomach kept tumbling in free fall as her pounding heart followed. She flailed her hands out, hit something metal, and grabbed onto it. She was so dizzy she could barely raise her head. Slowly, memories began to reconnect. She'd been running away, following Bobby's plan. They were going to escape together. But Bobby wasn't here. It was just her. And the rotting corpses of whomever or whatever stinking up the air. She licked her lips. They were rough as caked sand. The rest of her also felt gritty, dried sweat chafing with every movement. Water. Where was her water? She inched her hands through the darkness, the knowledge that the bucket might be gone raising a wave of acid up her throat. She laughed, a frail and hollow noise that echoed through the space. Guess she wasn't ready to die after all. Her fingers brushed the bucket at her side. She raised it to drink, careful not to waste any. Nothing came. She rubbed her hand down the side. Dry. A little moisture remained at the bottom, not enough to do more than coat her finger. Gone. It was all gone. Every muscle in her body felt braided with pain, stretched beyond endurance. Her left ankle worse of all, now swollen, it pulsed beneath the cable that restrained her. Since she was blind here, she had gouged it without her usual precision and expertise. All for nothing. Gingerly she stretched, listening to joints crack and groan like an old woman's. How long? How long had she been here? How long before he returned? How long before he started? Because if her silent yet stinky companions were any gauge, the worst was yet to come. Her eyes burned with tears, but none came. When she wiped them, only small grains of salt residue rubbed against her finger. Despite her thirst, she still had to pee. She resigned herself to the arduous task of searching for the commode. Better now than wetting herself when he got started. Maybe she was going to die, but she'd be damned if she'd humiliate herself for his pleasure. If things got too bad, she'd just float away again, go to her quiet place. If she was lucky, she'd never return.